Face the hammer.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Thor's Hammer Radio. I'm your host, Alex Thorson. You can catch me on the website, www.thorshammerradio.com. Catch me on Twitter, Alex Thorson at Thorhammer Radio. Find me on Facebook, Thor's Hammer Radio, and on Minds.com at Thor's Hammer Radio. Well, we got a lot to talk about. Plenty of new things this week. I guess the newest thing that's come out, because this whole Don Trump Jr. thing is kind of, well, it's fizzling out a bit. So, of course, they got a new scandal, quote-unquote scandal. And the newest thing is Trump apparently had a second undisclosed meeting with Vladimir Putin. Now, the idiot Democrat media here, they made it seem that it was this secret closed-door meeting. This is how they reported it initially. And it turns out, and this is why I like to wait, because it turns out that just about everything they pump out is just nonsense. It turns out this meeting was at the damn dinner table in front of all the G20 leaders. And the media knew about it. They've got video footage of this damn meeting, which was Trump coming over to sit next to Putin, because at the table, Vladimir Putin was sat next to Melania Trump, Donald Trump's wife. He came over to sit by him and talked with him, I don't know, about an hour, whatever. And the media says, oh, this is a huge thing. Huge! Like hell it is. Like him or not, we've got to talk to Vladimir Putin, or Donald Trump does, because he's the president. He's kind of expected to converse with national leaders. It's an undeniable fact that Vladimir Putin is the president of Russia. So Donald Trump has to talk to him at some point or another. Because, again, like him or not, Vladimir Putin is a very influential and important national leader. Yes, you can be a bad guy and also be important, too. Okay, so Donald Trump talking to him at the G20 conference in front of all the other leaders that were there, that's hardly a secret meeting. And the media knew about this. So, again, this is another example of an overblown nonsense, which I knew was the case. But, of course, they have to talk about it. They have to show it because, I don't know, collusion, Russia. I suppose every time Obama talked with Vladimir Putin or Medvedev or whatever, that was collusion, right? Yeah, give me a break. This is where the media just dials it up to 10 on everything, and it's just stupid, unbelievably stupid. Well, in other news, more important news, so the Republicans, thanks to Mike Lee, he's the main guy on this one, because he said no. There was one, Moran. He was the other one. Moran's really, he's kind of a flake, to be honest. Moran's really not that conservative. Mike Lee, however, is a very staunch conservative. And so both of them said they were not going to vote on it. And so that whole Obamacare light bill that they were going to pump out, well, it's failed. And now Mitch McConnell apparently has been dragged kicking and screaming to go with a full repeal. Well, it's about damn time, Mitch. He still needs to be repealed and replaced, Mitch does, along with all those other idiots that call themselves conservatives but really are not. This is good news, though, the fact that maybe, they'll start to push a full repeal. Of course, the Republican establishment morons have got their mouthpieces out trashing Mike Lee, saying that, oh, he's going to, it's because of him that Obamacare is going to stay in place. No. It's because of Mike Lee that we didn't get Obamacare light. We did not get a crap bill. And now we have a chance at a full repeal. Now it'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see how many Republicans actually vote yes on the full repeal. My guess, Susan Collins, who's not even a Republican, really, she'll say no. She's the senator from Maine. Let's see. Who else will probably say no? Lisa Murkowski from Alaska. And she's just a whiny brat. For those of you who remember, Lisa Murkowski, in one of the primary races for her Senate seat, she was actually beaten by Joe Miller, who later on decided to go as a Libertarian candidate because Joe Miller beat her in the primary. And then she ran a write-in campaign with all her big money donors, whatever, and she actually ended up winning. So she kept her seat. She's such a whiny brat, she couldn't even accept defeat in the primaries that she did a write-in campaign. And this Murkowski is liberal as Susan Collins, easily. So she's probably another one. And quite frankly, I'm kind of concerned with some of these other Republican senators. Because here's what's been going on. So you got this clown Mitch McConnell, who, let's just say it up front, folks, they lied to us. The GOP establishment, when they said they were going to repeal, they lied. They were full of it. And so now what they're doing, this guy Mitch McConnell, when he's pushing his version of the bill, which is not a full repeal, and he's promoting the stuff that his lobbyists want, Mitch is going to the different senators, and he's offering bribes, basically. He's saying, hey, I'm going to give this money to your state and your state, doling out bribes like he's some kind of mob boss, right? And what happens is that a lot of these Republican senators who aren't that principled, they'll take it, which is why you haven't had a repeal, because, well, hey, they want their money. You know, they got to run their money, huh? So this is what it's come to. This is the corruption of the GOP. And I'm sad to say, I don't think there's enough senators out there who are actually going to do a repeat of the 2015 full repeal that they sent to Obama's. It's amazing. They sent a full repeal to Obama's desk when they knew he'd veto it, when there was really no courage required. Now they have a Republican president and House and Senate. They've got everything in place to do it, but now they won't do it. So what does that tell you? That tells you that they're a bunch of liars. They always have been, and they'll continue to be so, which is why we have to repeal and replace Mitch McConnell as soon as humanly possible, because he is an absolute disgrace. He's useless. And man, it would have been great to see the current governor of Kentucky, Matt Bevin. Before he became governor, he actually ran against Mitch McConnell in the Senate primary. Now, he lost, and it would have been nice for Matt Bevin to beat him. Unfortunately, coulda, woulda, shoulda is not a strategy, so we have to look forward and see about trying to get rid of some of these useless GOP rhinos, these liberal Republicans, these progressives. Okay, they're not moderate Republicans, they're liberals, they're leftists. They're big government Republicans. They are not conservative whatsoever, and so they have to go. Okay, now, in terms of other stuff that's been coming up. So this investigation that Robert Mueller is doing. So now they want, and this is the Democrats, they want to bring every single person in Trump's family in. They're talking about bringing Ivanka in and Jared Kushner. And again, I've got no special brief for either of them, but what the hell are you bringing them in for? What if they have anything to do with this, especially Ivanka? They want to bring in just everyone connected to Trump. What the hell is this? Are we going to start bringing in the entire Trump family for this charade, this Stalinist show trial that's going on? This is ridiculous. This is an absolute perversion of justice. In fact, this isn't even justice. I want to ask Robert Mueller something. What the hell are you doing? What the hell kind of investigation is this? Let me ask you something, ladies and gentlemen. Do you put people under investigation first to then see if a crime's been committed? It's funny, I've never done that in my law enforcement career. Not once. It's always, you have to have a crime committed first, and then you do an investigation. You see, when Robert Mueller took control of this, when he was appointed, this became a criminal investigation. Okay, so what do you have to establish to start a criminal investigation? You have to start with something called probable cause. Okay, and the elements of probable cause. Well, then first element is you have to establish that a crime has in fact been committed in the first place. If you have no crime, you have no PC or probable cause. And then the second element is you have to determine that the individual or individuals that you're looking at, that you have reasonable belief to believe that they're the ones who committed the crime. Okay, those are the two elements of probable cause. Now, as far as I have yet to see, we haven't even established that a crime has been committed in the first place. So if you have no crime, why the hell are you investigating it in a criminal matter? I want to know that, because let me tell you, if I did this as a police officer, like if I put people under investigation just to see if they, hey, maybe you committed a crime somewhere, You know how many lawsuits I'd have against me? Hell, I'd be suspended from my department so fast. In fact, I'd probably be fired. And I'd have lawsuits against me. Definitely against the department. This is a complete inversion of justice. You have to have a crime committed first. And then you do the investigation. Now, Robert Mueller was the head of the FBI. He knows this. He knows damn well how probable cause works. So again, I gotta ask, what the hell are we even doing this investigation in the first place? Look, I get that Robert Mueller was appointed. Okay. But Robert Mueller, if he was going to do it the honorable way, the correct way, would say, look, we haven't even established that a crime has been committed, so what's the point in this investigation? You don't do it where the old Joseph Stalin way of, you show me the man and I'll find you the crime. No, that's not how the United States justice system works. That's not how it works at all. And going down this path is a really, really bad idea. Why? Because guess what? Anything that the Democrats can do, the Republicans, well, guess what? The shoe can be on the other foot just as easily. It really can. So this is a dangerous path to go down. I don't care if you approve of it because you hate Trump or whatever. This is about the proper form of American justice. And this is not it. What Mueller is doing right now, what the Democrats are pushing for, this is not it. This is the absolute perversion of justice. And anyone who cares about justice should be against this 100%. Against this entire investigation. Nobody has been able to actually pinpoint exactly what criminal statute was broken, from what I can see. Now see, in the case of Hillary Clinton, I can actually point to it. 18 United States Code, Section 793, Paragraph F. Google it. It's the Espionage Act. And in fact, James Comey, from what he's admitted, I can point to that as well, that same statute. Now with Donald Trump, what? Honestly, what criminal statute was out there that he violated? I don't know which one it would be. In fact, all these commentators and so-called experts, they haven't been able to point to any of them. So again, if there is no criminal statute violated, i.e. no crime committed, why the hell do we have a criminal investigation of Donald Trump? And apparently every person, everyone, and anyone possibly connected with him. But this is insane. This has become a Stalinist show trial. And if they had any decency and any honor, they would stop this. Because, again, if the shoe were on the other foot, and it very easily could come to that, well, the Democrats, I guarantee you, would be screaming bloody murder. As they should be. Because, again, this is a really bad precedent. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, I'm going to be talking about some crazy new Republican antics with transgender in the military? Yeah, you won't want to miss this one. All right, when we come back here on Thor's Hammer Radio. Welcome back to Thor's Hammer Radio. Well, I got one crazy story that I would never think would come out of the Republicans. But I guess the Republicans decided to have a new spin on the old be all you can be phrase from the Army. Yeah, we're talking about transgender issues in the military. As if we didn't have enough social experiment BS that Obama subjected the military to. But get this. This is from the Daily Caller. And this is reporter Henry Rogers from the Daily Caller as of July 14th, 2017. So, Republican Mississippi Representative Vicky Hartzler had a proposal to restrict funding for transgender members of the military. It was shut down in a close 209 to 214 vote on the House floor after 24 GOP members sided with Democrats. Of course, the Democrats voted in unison to say no to this. the Obama transgender policy, which was implemented without input from members of Congress. Okay, that alone should be a reason to get rid of this. The fact that Obama's just inputting this crap in the military without Congress approval, that alone should be a reason to get rid of this nonsense. And the idea was to basically stop this bringing in transgender individuals in the military because they're subjecting taxpayers to high medical costs. Yes, when you lop off your junk or you change it out, it's expensive. Lifetime hormone treatments. Yes, it's expensive. They even cite in there it's at least 130,000 or up to 130 grand per transition surgery. And the taxpayers fund this because the military is not a private organization. And there are 24 members of the Republican House that voted against this. Here's their names. California Rep. Paul Cook. I don't know who he is. California Rep. Jeff Denham. No, not the comedian. Not Jeff Dunham. So he's not walking around with his little sock puppets or doing his ventriloquist stuff. California Rep. Steve Knight. California Rep. Daryl Issa. Yeah, he's a clown. Colorado Rep. Mike Kaufman. Yeah, well, his career is going to be in a coffin if he keeps this up. Florida Rep. Carlos Curbelo. Florida Rep. Lena Ross Leighton. I've heard of this clown before. Real lightweight. Florida Rep. Brian Mast. This surprises the hell out of me. Brian Mast. For those of you who don't know who he is, Brian Mast is a military veteran himself. He's actually a disabled military veteran. He lost both his legs. So, you know, honorable service from this man. I can't for the life of me see why he voted no. That just blows my mind. I'll keep on going here. Michigan Rep. Justin Amash. You know, this Justin Amash guy, and he's from my home state of Michigan, he's turned out to be a real clown. If you go and look on Conservative Review, and you look at his voting record, how they judge with their freedom index for their elected representatives is they go by their voting record. And Justin Amash actually has a really high, it's like a 90-something on the, like, you know, the percentage to determine how conservative he is. But on some of these major issues, Amash lately has been voting completely the wrong way that you'd expect for a conservative. So this guy's just becoming a real flake. He's almost becoming another Ben Sass. Ben Sass is another one that's a real disappointment, by the way. That'd be Senator Ben Sass, where he's this guy who he does just enough to make it seem like he's a conservative, like just enough for his voting record. But on all the big major issues, he all votes along with the establishment. So Amash has turned him into a real letdown. Going further, Michigan Rep. Jack Bergman. I don't know and don't care about him. New Jersey Rep. Leonard Lance. New Jersey Frank LoBiondo. Okay. And New Jersey Rep. Tom MacArthur. New York Rep. John Faso. New York Rep. Elise Stefanik. New York Rep. Tom Reed. New York Rep. John Katko. Well, there's a lot of clowns from New York. Go figure. Real liberal state. New York Rep. Claudia Tenney. Mm-hmm. Pennsylvania Rep. Ryan Costello. No, not of the Abbott and Costello kind. Pennsylvania Rep. Charles Dent. Pennsylvania Rep. Bill Schuster. Yeah, I've heard of him before. He's a moron. Pennsylvania Rep. Brian Fitzpatrick. Virginia Rep. Barbara Comstock. Yeah, I'm not surprised with that one. And Washington Rep. David Reichert. So those are the 24 who voted no on this. And this is just, and they even go into the, when Hartzler, who was the one who introduced this bill, they talked about the deployability of individuals going through sex transition process is highly problematic, requiring 210 to 238 working days where a soldier is non-deployable after surgery. Ladies and gentlemen, you understand that 210 to 238 working days, that translates to about 8 months, 7 to 8 months. That's a lot of time. Consider that a mobilization for deployment typically takes about 3 months, 2 to 3 months. Now, sometimes it can go quicker, especially if you do individual deployment. You can get there in like a week or 2 weeks. But a deployment for a unit of soldiers requires about 3 months because you have to do all the battle tasks and everything. And then you have to get downrange, and then a typical deployment itself nowadays, I think, is 9 months. When I went to Afghanistan, it was a year, but now it's 9 months, I think. So basically, when they go through this process, well, right there, you're pretty much out for the entire deployment if they were going to go downrange. Not to mention that the time it takes to go through, like, the basic training and the AIT, which is the follow-on, and doing your MOS or your job specialty stuff, all of that, you get through that, and then you get to your unit, and you need as much time in your unit to train, and also you gain in rank as well, and all of that. There are some times where you end up deploying right off the bat as soon as you get out of all your training, get right to your unit. So this is a big problem. And this recovery time, when she goes further, this recovery time equates to 1.4 million manpower days where transgender personnel cannot deploy and fight our nation's wars. What she's getting at is that the whole transgender crap, which, it's a bunch of nonsense. Okay, we used to call these people crazies because they are. It's a mental disorder. I'm sorry. There's no such thing as a third gender or whatever. It's, you're either a man or a woman. That's it. Because if there was more than two genders, you would transition to something other than a man or a woman, wouldn't you? Okay, so there's, this whole transgender thing is nonsense. It's just mentally deranged people that want to, I don't know, they want to lop their junk off or whatever. It's just stupid. But now they want to bring them in the military. The military is not a social experiment. You don't have a right to be in the military. You have a right to try and join, to pursue your happiness, but you're not always going to be accepted because it's an elite force. It's a privilege to serve. And it's also a calling. And it just, I remember when I was downrange in Afghanistan, this was 2011, and Obama officially repealed the don't ask, don't tell policy. I remember having to give a three different parts to a mandatory briefing to my soldiers about this. It was a joke. One of the big problems that the military is facing, just to give you some insider scoop here, the military, you have to do these things called mandatory briefings. And one of them includes things like sexual harassment and prevention, the don't ask, don't tell policy. And you also do some stuff that's actually relevant, like the law of war and the code of soldiers' code of conduct. But they keep piling on these mandatory briefings, and they don't do it because it actually trains soldiers. They actually learn something. That's not the reason why. They do it so that they can check the box to say that they've been through this and they covered their ass, basically. So that way, if something happens, they can say, oh, look, we did the steps we're required to do. Whoop-de-doo. Yay. So this is what happens. And I guarantee with this thing, that's going to be even more stuff. And one of the problems, and this has been brought up, if you look at Army journals and, just the military publications in general, military commanders have been bringing up this point that there's so many of these mandatory trainings and this other stupid stuff, this social experiment stuff, it actually takes away from training time. So it actually reduces combat effectiveness for the entire force because soldiers all have to go through this kind of crap, this nonsensical, useless training. They're forced to do it, and this takes away from training time. So catering to like the 0.005% of the population that has a mental disorder that wants to lop their stuff off and become the next Bruce Jenner or Caitlyn Jenner, whatever the hell he calls himself. Yeah, well, this actually does end up affecting the entire force with having to put up with this crap. And yes, it affects combat readiness. And yes, this is one of the reasons why our military is severely degraded from what it used to be. And no, Trump is not doing enough with the budget for the military to bring it back up. I get that the president can't control the budget, okay? The Congress is the power of the purse. I understand that, but Trump really has to push for more funding for the military and stop this kind of crap when he can. Unfortunately, he can't, let me put it this way, he can't say, he can't like veto this because it never passed the House. What Trump can do, because apparently Obama put this stuff in place without Congress, so Trump can actually, through executive action, put a stop to this because he controls the executive branch and thus controls the military. He's the commander in chief. So everything that Obama did by his pen and a phone, if Congress doesn't act, he will. Well, guess what? Trump can do the same thing. So he can actually put an end to this. And he should. Because there's no reason why the military should be forced to cater to this stuff. Because this affects combat readiness, this affects deployability, and yes, it affects our overall ability to fight in wars. Also, just from an optic standpoint, our military looks like a complete joke if we go by this. So, but ladies and gentlemen, just remember these 24 representatives. Two of them are from my state, which is embarrassing. But yeah, just remember them and remember that they voted to keep this in effect, this transgender crap that's going to affect our entire military. Really, really just screwball sign of the times that we live in. No, be all you can be does not mean changing to Bruce Jenner or Caitlyn Jenner or changing to Chaz Bono or whatever. No, that's not what it means. That may be Obama's version of it, but that's not the actual version of it. And besides, the Army doesn't even use Be All You Can Be anymore. It's Army Strong. Or hell, they probably changed that again since I've been out. So they keep changing their slogan. But anyway, that's a different matter entirely. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to take a break here. When we come back, we'll wrap it up with a few things, too, including a newest DOJ memo that's come out about the civil asset forfeiture. I want to get into this because there's been a lot of going over the top on some of this stuff with some of the reporting. So I want to delve into this and we'll go into more depth on it. But anyway, when we come back here on Thor's Hammer Radio. Hello everybody, welcome back to Thor's Hammer Radio. Well, now moving off the reasons why the taxpayer should have to pay for even more Bradley Mannings in a dress and wig, on to more, justice-related matters. Civil asset forfeiture. Okay, so on the 19th of this month, July 19th, 2017, Attorney General Jeff Sessions issued a new memorandum regarding civil asset forfeiture. And there was an NBC reporter that tweeted this out and basically complete hysterics saying that, oh, now the DOJ can seize property without a crime being committed and against state laws, basically in lieu of state laws, which I kind of figured from the get-go was just complete hysterics and way over the top. And reading the memo itself, I found out that's exactly the case. Before I get into the memo, I just want to kind of go over civil asset forfeiture, just kind of give you an idea of what it is. Okay, so the idea with civil asset forfeiture, the way it's used in law enforcement, is that if you got somebody who's a criminal, mainly a drug dealer, a mafia type, it's also used against terrorist organizations too. When they catch them doing these certain actions, they also end up seizing whatever property is by them. For example, and I've done this in my job as a law enforcement officer, when I've got somebody who's selling narcotics and they got cash on them, what we'll do is we'll forfeit that cash. And you can also take other stuff too. They got a phone on them, you can forfeit that. They're in a car, you can forfeit that. If they got jewelry, rings, watches, necklaces, you can forfeit that. Basically, anything of monetary value, you can forfeit it. And this has also been used, like I said, against terrorists, like foreign terrorist organizations. There was actually one relatively recently. If I remember right, this was a group that was basically linked to the government of Iran, the mullahs in Iran. And they ended up seizing their civil assets. Now, me personally, I don't really have a problem with seizing the civil assets of foreign terrorists. I don't really have a problem with hitting mafiosos and drug dealers in their pocketbooks either. Because also from my personal experience, hitting them in their pocketbooks is actually a really effective way to get them off the street and deal with them. Some of those consequences are if you take away their money, which they ended up owing the other dope man, for example, well, they may end up getting beat up or killed once they get out of prison or the like, or if they get put out on bail. Yes, that kind of thing can happen. So there's definitely their cons to it as well. Listen, there's plenty you can have about the pros and cons of civil asset forfeiture. And there's plenty to talk about there. And there's been studies done about what some people call policing for profit. And granted, there are some of these regulatory agencies, not law enforcement, but regulatory agencies, that have used civil asset forfeiture, been kind of abusive of it. For example, like the Bureau of Land Management, the way they take up all this territory out west. Well, in a way, that's civil asset forfeiture. When the IRS takes away your home or business, yeah, that's civil asset forfeiture right there. So there are obviously some serious downsides. What this memo is talking about here is using against criminals. I just want to read to you a few parts from this memo. So one of the charges against what's going on here is that this is in violation of even state laws, because there's some states, like my home state of Michigan, you can seize civil assets, whereas some states don't allow it. Okay, reading directly from this memo. Under the Attorney General's order, federal adoption of all types of assets seized lawfully by state or local law enforcement under their respective state laws is authorized whenever the conduct giving rise to the seizure violates federal law. Okay, right there it says, under their respective state laws, by state or local law enforcement. Okay, and what they mean by federal adoption is that if you got a, say for example, narcotics trafficking. Well, if you have a Schedule I drug, give you a heads up too, with narcotics they have different schedules of drugs. It's Schedule 1 through 5. And a Schedule 1 drug is like the really illegal stuff, okay? So if they have like say they have a bunch of cocaine and they seize it, well, that's a violation of federal law. So what the federal government can do in this instance is that if the state or local law enforcement seizes that, the feds can adopt that. Basically, the FBI takes control of that from the state and local law enforcement. And usually that's an elective thing. Okay, so the local law enforcement says, hey, we don't have the storage space to store all this cocaine. Feds, you take it. Agencies, and I'm just reading more in this memo. The net equality and value thresholds found in the Department of Justice manual will continue to apply. Agencies and components should prioritize the adoption of assets that will advance the Attorney General's violent crime reduction strategy. The Department, through legal counsel for federal investigative agencies, as well as the U.S. Attorney's offices, will continue to ensure that adoptions are conducted in compliance with law and department policies. Specifically, the following safeguards, among others, shall be maintained and implemented to ensure there is sufficient evidence of criminal activity and the evidence is well documented. Okay, so this is addressing the other charge that it's against people. It can be used against people who haven't even been charged with a crime. Okay, well, the memo actually addresses that directly. To ensure that adoptions involve property lawfully seized, legal counsel at the federal agency adopting the seized property must continue to review all seizures for compliance with law, especially seizures made pursuant to an exception to the Fourth Amendment's warrant requirement. What they're talking about here, anyone who's in law enforcement can tell you, there's 10 exceptions to the search warrant rule, okay? When police officers go in, if they need to go into a house or a car, anyone's private property, typically they have to have a warrant. There's certain exceptions to that rule. One of those exceptions, for example, is plain view or open view. Okay, if I pull you out on a traffic stop, you know, I'm standing on the street and I'm looking through your car windows, and I see a whole bunch of firearms, and not just your typical, like I see, I see like a light machine gun sitting in your car, and I see some grenades and other explosive stuff. Okay, that's in plain view because it's sitting in the back seat and I can see it. Or I go in and I stop by to your house, whatever, and I look over and there's a bunch of marijuana growing in your front yard. Okay, that's plain view. I can see it. there's no expectation of privacy is what they call it, okay? When they talk about plain view, they brought in this thing called expectation of privacy. You don't have an expectation of privacy on a public street, or you don't have expectation of privacy when somebody can look in and see it from the street, like look in your front yard. Or if you've got an open backyard and you see like, oh, you got a weed farm going on. Well, there's no expectation of privacy from just Joe Blow off the street looking in and seeing that. So that's what they're talking about. And other exceptions to the warrant rule include, for example, medical emergency. If I walk by and I hear screaming and calling for help from inside a house, I can rush in there to do a medical emergency. And if I happen to see stuff in the area when I'm in there, well, hey, guess what? I'm in the house performing a medical emergency. Another one is a hot pursuit. If I'm chasing somebody for, you know, I committed a crime and I'm chasing after them, That's an exception as well. And that falls under something called exigent circumstances as well. And so there's these 10 exceptions to the search warrant rule. And that's what they're referring to in this first bullet point. So going forward, next bullet point. To assist federal legal counsel in this review process, the form used by the state and local agency seeking federal adoption of seized assets. Request for adoption of state and local seizure will require that the state or local agency provide additional information about the probable cause determination justifying the seizure. Well, it sounds to me from reading this, they're actually, one, they're just kind of updating the forms, to be honest. They're kind of streamlining it, and they're actually making the burden of proof even stricter. Okay, going forward. Adoptions of cash amounts equal to or less than $10,000 may require additional safeguards. These adoptions will be permissible where the seizure was conducted, one, pursuant to a state warrant, two, incident to arrest for an offense relevant to the forfeiture, that'd be like drug offenses, mafia, things like that, three, at the same time as a seizure of contraband relevant to the forfeiture, or four, where the owner or person of from whom the property is seized makes admissions regarding the criminally derived nature of the property. Okay, so again, this seems to all be in compliance with just laws already on the books. Fourth bullet point, department officials should proceed with particular caution when deciding whether to waive the department's net equity thresholds for real property. And in considering the forfeiture of personal residences where title or ownership lies with persons not implicated in illegal conduct. Okay, yeah, so that what they're talking about there is that if a crime is committed in a house, but it's not the person who, the person who owns the house is not the one who did it, well, that's what they're talking about. It's like, basically, if somebody was using somebody else's house to conduct illegal activity, well, you can't just take that house because the owner of the house is not the guy doing it, so, and that's what he's referring to. Going forward. In order to give individual property owners an opportunity to challenge the seizure as soon as practicable, the department will expedite federal agencies' decisions regarding adoptions and their provisions of notice to interested parties. State and local law enforcement agencies must request federal adoption within 15 calendar days following the date of seizure. The adopting federal agency must send notice to interested parties within 45 days of the date of seizure. These time limitations may be extended for good cause by the Supervisory Forfeiture Council of the adopting agency, provided that such extensions are documented in writing and include a description of the circumstances justifying the extension. And going further in this, to facilitate implementation of these safeguards to help ensure that federal adoptions advance federal law enforcement objectives, the department is enhancing its asset forfeiture training. Okay, so he's just talking about going into training with that. And then the next big paragraph down here basically talks about updating, getting rid of some old forms and updating other ones. Making conforming updates to something called the Consolidated Asset Tracking System, or CATS. I don't think it has nine lives. Consistent with current policy, state and local agencies are required to complete adoption form only when seeking federal adoptions. Seizures made as part of a joint federal-state investigations or pursuant to federal seizure warrants are not considered adoptions. Agency participants must review the circumstances of a seizure by state and local law enforcement to determine whether it is a federal adoption. All hysterics aside from your usual clowns that apparently don't understand this stuff too much. So what Sessions is talking about in this memo? And he's talking about, one, being in compliance with state and local and federal laws. So no, he can't just
override state laws to if they don't allow it. And he's talking about specifically federal adoptions. As I mentioned earlier, when the state and local law enforcement agency sees something and then they contact the feds and say, hey, can you hold on to this for us? Federal adoptions for federal crimes. Two, they're talking about getting rid of some old forms and kind of streamlining the process. And then three, another big thing in here was they were talking about making it expedited, more streamlined for people to challenge that. So again, the reason why I bring this up is because there's a lot of nonsense out there basically trying to make Sessions look bad. It's like, look, they're not about, he's not about overriding state and local law enforcement. This is about strictly, from what I've read here, and I've read this damn memo front to back, this is about federal adoption in these instances. Okay, but by the way, I find it hilarious that all the libs out there that are critiquing this and launching their hysterics, they're talking about the 10th Amendment and states' rights. I find that hilarious. These are the same libs who love the federal government, love overarching, iron-fisted federal leviathan control. And yeah, they're worrying about states' rights. Okay, yeah. Makes sense to me. But just looking through this memo, what's in here, look, if you're going to critique this, at least be honest about it and talk about what's actually written in here. Don't go into these ridiculous hysterics saying that, oh, he's completely taken over state and local law enforcement. No, that's not at all what's written in here. Now, again, if you want to have a debate on civil asset forfeiture in general and talk about, obviously, the downsides with it and the pros of it and how it should be used, things like that, okay, cool, no problem, got it. That's plenty to debate there. But let's be honest about what's actually written in this thing. And no, don't give me the, well, it can be abused here and here. We're not talking about when it can be abused. We're talking about this policy that just came out and what's actually in here and what they're talking about. That's what this is about. So we're having a debate on new DOJ memo that talks about federal adoption in civil asset forfeiture, and that's it. Again, let's be honest about the actual what Attorney General Jeff Sessions just came out with in his memo, which is available to the public. You can read it yourself. www.justice.gov. That's where I found this. All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, that's it for today. I do appreciate you joining me. Again, as always, you can catch me here on the website, www.thorshammerradio.com. You follow me on Twitter, Alex Thorson, at Thorhammer Radio. You can find me on Minds.com, at Thorshammer Radio. And also catch me on Facebook, Thorshammer Radio. All right, I do appreciate you listening to this podcast. And I'll see you next time here on Thorshammer Radio.
Face the hammer.